Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Yeah, well, lots to talk about, Dennis.
Oh, yeah. Let's start talking about student loans. That seems to be an issue that is dividing Democrats and Republicans across the country and, of course, across Iowa. By student loan, I mean, according to the Washington Post, I'm quoting now, the complex politics of student debt relief burst into full view last week following President Biden's decision to forgive millions of dollars in student loans. And the Post says that added a twist of uncertainty to an electoral landscape that had been shifting in the Democrats' direction. Fissures, I like that term. Fissures opened instantly within the Democratic Party as moderates said Biden was doing too much. Liberals demanded he do more. And of course, Republicans lined up in adamant opposition to the debt forgiveness plan. Among the Republicans lining up in adamant opposition, Chuck Grassley, U.S. Senator from Iowa, Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. Let's talk about that.
So the plan, borrowers can get up to $10,000 forgiven in most cases, or up to $20,000 if they qualify for Pell Grants, which is generally for lower income borrowers. No one is eligible for this debt forgiveness program if their income is above $125,000 a year. And the Biden administration estimated that 87% of the people who qualify are going to be earning less than $75,000 a year. There are also going to be reforms to the payments. So right now, borrowers can have up to 10% of their disposable income directed towards student loans, and that's going to be cut to 5%. And also the definition of discretionary income is going to change in a way that's more favorable to borrowers. So not only will a lot of people get their debt wiped out, an estimated 20 million Americans will have their student loan debt completely wiped out, another 20 or 23 million Americans will see the burden reduced. And among that group, their monthly payment is also likely to be reduced. So a lot of people will benefit. But as you said, it's a divisive issue. Republicans, politicians, including in Iowa, said it's unfair that people who didn't go to college or people who already paid back their student loans shouldn't be paying for other people's college. I should add that other people are not exactly paying for these loans. The federal government already incurred the expense by extending the loan. So nobody is exactly paying for this. It's just in any different way from any other kind of federal spending, farm subsidies, defense spending, foreign aid. It all comes out of the same pot. So it's not that it's not that money is going to be taken away from some people to give to student loan borrowers.
Right. One can understand, though, I think the angst that some Democrats are feeling here. They feel that it is almost a giveaway to students, if you will. And a reminder that most people in the United States do not have a college education, and so they're not eligible for this. That's part of the angst, I think.
It is part of it, but there are a lot of federal programs that most people don't qualify. I mean, most people don't qualify for farm subsidies, for instance. I noticed that Liz Mathis, who's the Democratic candidate running in the 2nd District in Northeast Iowa, she said it wasn't so much that she was criticizing the debt relief. She just said that it's not addressing the root cause, which is the rising cost of higher education. And so she was framing it in that way. I think that that is a message that is probably going to resonate with some Democrats. But the first polling that I saw over the weekend, this was not Iowa specific polling, it was national polling, but it was generally favorable. It was about 54% to 46% in favor of the plan. And among Democrats, it was overwhelmingly in favor of the plan. So the Democratic politicians who are hedging about this are probably worried about trying to win over some independent or Republican voters. Because the Democratic base generally seems very happy with what the president's done.
And of course, Republicans are going to use President Biden, no matter what he does, no matter what policy we're talking about, as a piñata in this election. And that's certainly happening in the 3rd congressional district, where Cindy Axne, the Democratic incumbent, says Zach Nunn, the Republican opponent, they are campaigning over Biden's essentially first 2 years in office, arguing about it. Was it good? Was it bad? Now, of course, abortion is going to play an issue in this campaign, as in others. But the president and his Inflation Reduction Act, that's a big deal right now in that race.
Yes. Well, Biden's approval rating in Iowa is not good. And so Republican candidates are going to try to tie all of the Democrats for all of the offices to Biden. I mean, the state legislative races, the other statewide elections, as we discussed last week, Brenna Byrd, who is running for attorney general, is talking about how Tom Miller is too beholden to the Biden administration. So clearly the Republicans see it as an advantage to nationalize the election. And Cindy Axne is trying to pivot to talk more about her bipartisan record.
Right. One of the things in the legislation that the Republicans are particularly focusing on here at the boogeyman is the Internal Revenue Service adding thousands of agents. And what many candidates are saying across the country is they're coming for you. They are going to get into your house and audit you. Now, that is not true, but they're using it in that way as a sledgehammer.
And I saw that when Cindy Axne was speaking on the Des Moines Register's political soapbox at the Iowa State Fair, and she was talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and some of the things she was proud of in the act, she did say we need more IRS agents or we need more IRS enforcement. And I expect that that clip is going to end up in some, if it's not a Zach Nunn ad, it's going to be an ad by some Republican aligned group targeting Cindy Axne. That clearly is an issue that Republicans see as winning for them. But Democrats have said, look, people call the IRS. Most people can't get a call back. They can't get an email answered. Ed Tibbetts, who used to be the opinion page editor for the Quad City Times, he just wrote a column about how he got $50 back from the IRS, and it was the previous year's return. That's how far the backlog was. So I think that Cindy Axne's strategy is just going to say, this is about the IRS providing better services to people, so you don't have to wait as long for your refunds, and the equipment will be better, the technology will be better, maybe more people will have access to free tax preparation, that sort of thing. And of course, Republicans, including Chuck Grassley, have talked about how this is going to be agents that's going to be burdensome, and they'll be targeting middle-income people. So that'll be a message, but I don't know that, Cindy Axne, she can't really run away from it. She's already talked about it in a setting that was filmed, so she might as well stick with it.
And I think one of the unfortunate things for the Democrats is that the act is called the Inflation Reduction Act. There's no evidence that it's going to reduce inflation.
No, it could have a very small impact on inflation. I think that it, like I said in a previous week, it reminds me of the infrastructure bonding program that Democrats approved when Chuck Culver was governor, and they called it iJobs. Like it was a job creation thing. And there were some jobs created by the construction projects, but it wasn't primarily a job creation act, and it fell short of the job creation promises. They should have just talked about it as investing in our infrastructure, which is what it did. And many of those projects are going to probably pay dividends for decades, but it wasn't really a jobs program.
Right. Well, with Labor Day coming up, we know that that's really the unofficial kickoff of the fall campaign. That's when everybody really gets serious about this. But last week, right before Labor Day, a week before, a rush of new TV ads in the Des Moines Metro. And this was very interesting to see these ads. So in general, and we're going to focus in on the districts here, but in general, candidates for the U.S. House want to convince voters they're not just loyal to their own party and they're willing to work across the aisle. Let's focus on the third district, Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn. They both shied away from tying themselves to their parties.
This is a very closely divided district. Donald Trump barely beat out Joe Biden by a few hundred votes in this district. It's got a partisan index of R+3, meaning that the counties in this district tend to vote about 3 points more Republican than the country as a whole. So it's not an overwhelmingly Republican district, but it's not a district that any candidate can win just with Democratic votes and independents who lean toward Democrats. So that's why we're hearing talk of bipartisanship. Zach Nunn's new ad shows him a military uniform, highlights his military service in the Air Force and the Air National Guard. It's similar to an ad that he ran in the primary, but in the primary, the messaging, the visuals were similar, but the messaging was conservative Zach Nunn, and he's going to strengthen the border and so on. And of course, the message of the general election ad has pivoted toward bipartisan work.
And Cindy Axne made zero mention of the Inflation Reduction Act that we were just talking about. Instead, she tied herself to, I hope our audience is sitting down, Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley.
Yes, she talked about her bipartisan work, including working on a bill with Chuck Grassley. And I did talk to some Democrats who were not happy. They said, if you're going to talk about bipartisan work, why doesn't she talk about something she did with Joni Ernst, who's not on the ballot, instead of talking about Chuck Grassley when Mike Franken is trying to challenge Grassley and talk about how he hasn't been doing enough for Iowa. So that was something that ruffled some feathers in the Democratic Party. But I should say, I do think that Cindy Axie, she's got a well-funded campaign. She's probably going to release 8 or 10 more ads before this thing is done. And I do expect that there will be ads focusing on some aspects of the Inflation Reduction Act. She may not use that language, but I do think that she'll talk about Medicare being able to negotiate drug prices. I think she'll talk about reducing insulin costs for people who are on Medicare. And so I do expect to see some that the AARP, for instance, thanked Cindy Axne for her vote for that bill and talked about things that were good for seniors. I expect that she will be talking about some of the provisions. She may even talk about some of the climate change provisions.
So let's talk about the second congressional district, Democratic challenger Liz Mathis against incumbent Ashley Hinton, both former TV people. And the reason we mention that is because they're both widely known in that district, and they are both quite appealing on-camera personalities, shall we say. So Mathis takes out an ad last week, a TV ad, bipartisan ad saying Republicans need to stop the culture wars, but Democrats need to lower costs for families.
Sometimes when I watch political ads, they say, watch it with the sound turned down and see what it suggests. And this Liz Mathis ad, the visuals include clips of her going back decades on television in the Waterloo Cedar Rapids market with different hairstyles, very 90s.
Yes.
A lot of people will recognize that. The Iowa electorate is mostly people over age 50, and many of them will remember Liz Mathis. So the visuals of it are strong. And I think in some ways for a challenger, it's a victory just even to be on the air before the incumbent has started running ads. Remember, we talked about how Cindy Axne came out of the gate with some negative ads on Zach Nunn before he had a chance to get a positive spot up there. Well, Ashley Hinson, the incumbent in the second district, this is the Northeast Iowa district, she hasn't been running any ads, and she also hasn't had a chance to define Liz Mathis yet. So I think that first ad, Liz Mathis is in the Iowa legislature. She is considered one of the more moderate Democrats in the state Senate. And so it's not surprising that she would emphasize her bipartisan orientation there.
Yeah, I think you really picked out a good thing on that ad. When I saw it, the first thing I noticed was she is obviously doing a television ad about her being on television over the decades, showing her growing, not older, but up and more mature, et cetera, et cetera. And that would appeal to probably a lot of people who watched her over 20 years in that market. Of course it would.
I remember the first time she ran for the Iowa Senate, it was in a special election in 2011, and it was very high stakes because the Democrats had a 26-24 Iowa Senate majority. So if they lost that race, they were going to lose their majority. And I remember reading at the time that Liz Mathis had just a tremendously high favorability rating from her time on TV, even compared to other local newscasters who were on at the same time. So that's something that she will continue to play up in those ads.
Let's talk about the first congressional district. And this is, we don't want to confuse people because the first and the second have flipped because of the redistricting. So we're talking about the new one, okay? The new one, which is in Southeast Iowa, the new first district where we've got Democrat Christina Bohannon running against incumbent Marionette Miller Meeks, who won her campaign last time by 6 votes against Rita Hart. So this is going to be tight. She released an ad, Bohannon did, highlighting support for policies popular with both Demos and Republicans.
And this was interesting. Again, Miller Meeks has a lot of money in the bank. She has more money than Bohannon. And I was surprised that she didn't go up on the air first. And she, even with a positive ad, she definitely didn't go up on the air to try to define Christina Bohannon. So, like I said, in some ways, it's a victory for the challenger to even be the first to be up with a TV ad. Christina Bohannon's day job is to be a law professor at the University of Iowa. And I anticipate that Republicans are going to try to portray her as part of the liberal Iowa City elite. And so in this ad, she emphasized that she grew up in a trailer park. This is a part of every stump speech I've ever seen her give. She talks about growing up in a trailer. One of the most exciting days of her childhood was when her parents got a double wide trailer and it seemed so much more spacious. But she talks about how her dad lost his job and lost his health insurance. And they had to make really tough choices about his medication or paying for other household essentials. So she is trying to make herself relatable. It's a typical first ad introducing yourself to the electorate. And just to be, for her to be able to be on TV before Republicans have started running attack ads on her, I think that is certainly a positive sign. But it is a Republican-leaning district.
And one more note on the congressional races before we move on. Tim Scott, Republican U.S. Senator from South Carolina. He was in Iowa over the weekend campaigning for second congressional district incumbent Ashley Hinson. And he verbally used President Biden, as I'll use that term again, as a piñata while deflecting questions. I like that term, piñata. Yeah. While deflecting questions about whether he himself is going to run for president. None of this is surprising.
Right. Well, yeah. When somebody like Tim Scott, a charismatic senator, comes to Iowa for an event, everybody knows that he's testing the waters to possibly run for another office. He joked that, yes, he wants to be president of his homeowners association when somebody said, I hope you run for president. But Ashley Hinson is a rising star. She is somebody who could be in leadership very soon in the House Republican caucus. They already gave her a seat on the Appropriations Committee as a first term member of Congress. That almost never happens. And so that is bringing out, that was a big gun to go and headline her fundraiser. I wanted to say one more thing about these races. So the third district race between Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn, most of the national forecasters do rate that as lean Republican. And the first and second district races, the Inside Elections has just recently changed that from likely Republican to lean Republican. And two of the other major forecasters, the Cook Political Report and Sabato's Crystal Ball, still see those as likely Republican holds.
And Randy Feenster in the 4th District hasn't taken out, as far as I know, any TV ads. In fact, he doesn't even have to take out a 10-second radio ad. He's going to win in that district.
It's not really perceived as a competitive race. I did see that the Democratic candidate, Ryan Melton, was saying that his campaign is hoping to be able to launch some radio ads. Of course, a lot of people listen to radio in rural and small town Iowa, but that is just a really tough district, a district that voted for Trump by more than 20 points.
And obviously, I love radio, and so do you. I spent a lot of years on it. We're on it right now. By the way, I was a TV guy here in Fresno, and if I ever ran for office, I would not show my first times on television because nobody would recognize me. It is 17 and a half, almost 18 after the hour, whatever you're listening to us, wherever, and with a piñata or without. And you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week. We're having fun tonight. Your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We have a piñata, and we're here every week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style, and how it's affecting all of us. Let's get serious, Laura. None of this piñata stuff. Governor Reynolds, very serious, announced business tax cuts last week, and this is a big deal for her. She said the tax on businesses that Iowa uses to fund benefits for jobless workers going to drop to its lowest rate in more than two decades. And, you know, where did she get the money? From the federal government, of course.
Right. Well, when the governor allocated amount of money from the CARES Act, she allocated about $400 million. And then later from the other acts, several hundred more million. So the total is about $725 million that went straight to the unemployment trust fund. And that might sound like it goes to unemployed Iowans, but in fact, the main purpose of putting all of that extra money in there was to keep the business taxes from going up. And also, you recall that we discussed during the legislative session that Republicans in the Iowa House and Senate approved and the governor signed a reduction in unemployment benefits. The maximum that people can collect went down from 26 weeks to 16 weeks. And there were some other changes that are likely to reduce the amount of unemployment benefits paid. And that's another reason why those taxes are lower. The legislature has already approved a number of corporate tax cuts. Those don't affect every business. The unemployment cuts, again, that won't be a huge amount for the bottom line for every business. But I expect that when the governor does launch her TV ads, one thing that she'll be talking about a lot is the business climate in Iowa.
And virtually all the Democrats could say about this last week is that the thing shows the reduction in the tax on businesses shows the governor has prioritized businesses while not supporting workers enough. What else can they say?
Well, I mean, it was a lot of money from the CARES Act and the other funds to put straight into that unemployment trust fund. I mean, there are lots of decisions that you can make about how to spend money, and some of them might help certain groups of people. And this one is something that helps business owners.
Deidre DeGeer, she's running against Kim Reynolds, in case you did not know, for the governorship. She's trailing by 17 points in the latest Des Moines Register poll. She put out her education policy last week. She's going to be campaigning on this a lot, talking about a new one-time state funding out of the state's budget surplus, which is mighty, for K through 12 schools. So she wants to give school systems an immediate $300 million extra in state funding.
Yes, this was, she called it a level set, because we've had a number of years, 10 or 12 years, that K through 12 funding increases from the state have not kept pace with the rising costs that school districts have. So the way she described this is, this would be a large increase of, I think, at least 6%, maybe even a little more than 6%. And then it would be easier to keep up with inflation after that. But the word that she used in a briefing with reporters repeatedly, she used the expression level set. And we have this big surplus. We have rainy day funds, and our schools are really hurting. Costs are going up. We have teacher shortages. And what we need to do now is prioritize education funding and keep the K through 12 schools strong.
One of the things she's been saying in campaign stops is Iowa can do better. That is a seemingly a repetitive slogan on her part. She is facing severe headwinds in her campaign against the governor. We're 2 months out here. You and I have always been, if nothing, honest. We are honest on this show. Is there anything she can really do to break through at this point?
It's tough. I mean, she doesn't have a lot of money to spend. I think that she's going to have to really target her advertising, and she won't be able to run as many ads as, let's say, Fred Hubbell did during the 2018 campaign. And so maybe instead of starting with just the traditional introductory ad, she might have to go with something more attention getting. I think that her best bet probably is to highlight education and the abortion issue. She does say, as you say, Iowa can do better. Another thing, a slogan that I've heard her use many times on the stump is Iowa's worth the work, and right, she's willing to do the work.
She will be, I think, indefatigable out there. She'll campaign very hard for the next couple of months. We'll see how it plays out on election night when you and I will be here on KHOI. All right, here's an exclusive from a friend of mine. Ethics Board cleared use of state building for Governor Reynolds' State of the Union response by my friend. Well, wait a minute. This is Laura Bellin of Bleeding Heartland. You have been on this story seemingly forever. You have now exclusively ended it. Tell us about this.
So this really, it wasn't going to be a story at all. It was just going to be a tweet after the governor delivered the response to the president's State of the Union address in March. I wondered, where was she standing? If you recall, she had the gold-lit Capitol Dome in the background, and it was a very attractive framing. And I thought, well, this was, it looked like it was maybe on the State Historical Building Terrace. And so I asked, I did find out that it was the State Historical Building Terrace. And then the next question I had was, who paid for it? And I was just going to really post on social media. I didn't even plan to write a whole article about whether it was the governor's campaign or the Republican National Committee or the Republican Governors Association. And I couldn't get an answer. And then I found out that they didn't pay anything to use the space. And that was unusual, because that terrace usually costs thousands of dollars to rent. And this year it wasn't even available to rent because the building is under renovation. So in March, I started trying to dig into this, and I did some reporting based on what I knew then. But I also filed public records requests with both the governor's office and the Department of Cultural Affairs, which manages that state historical building in downtown Des Moines. And I received hundreds of pages of files. But what I thought was interesting, and what I highlighted in my story today, is that the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, which is the agency that has jurisdiction to enforce rules on using public resources and whether something is for a political purpose, they assured the governor's legal counsel ahead of time, before the State of the Union address, that it would not be a violation of the law for the governor to give that speech from the estate property, either her office, her formal office, or, as she ended up doing, on the terrace of the State Historical Building. He said that the executive director of that ethics board said this is not a political purpose, because the governor was not going to be advocating expressly for electing or defeating any candidates for office.
Okay, so you started the story and you ended it. No more, right? You're putting the files away?
Well, we'll see. I still may have a few more questions about this, but I think that I think this is I've fairly well answered the questions. I mean, the governor's campaign did pay some expenses associated with the equipment rentals, renting the tent that they used because it was very cold on March 1st, and for the catering. But I basically got my answer about why the governor wasn't charged anything to use that space, and also that the ethics board already said ahead of time that this wasn't a violation of any state law on using public resources for political things.
Okay, in our last 4 minutes, we can get into a couple of things. The Des Moines Register sort of sent an early warning out about Tom Miller and the state attorney general's race. This is going to be very interesting. They're saying this could be Tom's most difficult race yet. He's won 10 times with Republican Guthrie County Attorney Brenna Byrd. She's aggressive. She's out campaigning him so far. She's out fundraising. How much trouble is Tom Miller in after, you know, forever in office?
Well, I think that he's in some trouble. I mean, he and also Mike Fitzgerald, who has been elected 10 times as well as state treasurer, they are both facing a very different environment. And Brenna Byrd ran for attorney general in 2010, and she did work hard. She campaigned hard, and former governor at the time, he was the former governor, Terry Brand, said he was running for the governor's office again. He did a lot to promote her. He talked her up in a lot of his stump speeches, and she fell quite short, but she has a lot more experience now than she did then. And she is outraising Tom Miller, though he is raising more money than I've ever seen him raise before. So I do expect that Republicans will probably outspend Tom Miller in that race, but maybe not by as much as I would have thought after I looked at those May fundraising disclosures from the campaigns.
And she is campaigning with a promise to sue the Biden administration for almost everything, and that may play in Iowa.
Yes, and she's also promising to support Kim Reynolds more, which is interesting. I mean, Tom Miller's office does defend the state, defends almost all the state laws. He has refused to get involved in defending that 2018 abortion ban, what the Republicans call the heartbeat bill and Democrats call the six-week ban. He has refused to do that. But for the most part, he does defend the state, and including bills, the laws that the governor signed. But Brenna Byrd has talked about doing much more to support the governor if elected to that attorney general position.
2 minutes left. Let's talk about Spirit Lake here. Now, we know that Republicans are using education as a wedge issue in many campaigns. The governor certainly has. And on this one, this is so interesting that Northwest Iowa School District, Spirit Lake, the board unanimously voted last week to let staff carry firearms on campus while school is in session. This is so interesting.
Well, this was the first, to our knowledge, it was the first school district in Iowa that's going to have armed staff members, not classroom teachers. I just don't know. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on the training. It's not just being armed, because we saw in Uvalde, Texas, that there were armed people in the school standing around outside the classroom for 45 minutes to an hour. So they said that this, the program is supposed to be protecting the schools by allowing for a more rapid response to active shooters. I just don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I hope that nothing like that happens in Spirit Lake or in any other Iowa school district. But as we've seen, it could happen anywhere in the country.
And very quickly, there's a battle going on in here in Central California involving one major high school, Bullard High School here in Fresno, where the principal wants to take cell phones away from students during the school day because the students have been using the cell phones to post racist messages and just post garbage out there. Parents are up in arms, worried about, if my students don't have access to a cell phone during the school day, what if there's an active shooter?
I mean, it's just amazing that that's something that that's where people's minds go. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Columbine happened, and it was absolutely shocking.
I know. Schools, another one of those wedge issues in the fall here. We've got 30 seconds left. What are you looking for this week? What's on your crystal ball?
I'm going to be watching for when Chuck Grassley and Mike Franken start running ads, when Governor Reynolds starts running ads. Usually Labor Day is around the time that everybody gets really serious about their campaigns.
You think Franken will focus on abortion?
I think that he may run an ad on abortion, or perhaps an outside group supporting him will. But I think that his message is going to be that he's a different kind of person, and that Chuck Grassley maybe worked for Iowa in the past but isn't working anymore. That seems to be the message of his stump speech.
We are out of pinatas for tonight. You have a great week, okay?
You too, Dennis.
You have been listening to Capital Week on KHY Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions and pinatas expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHY or its staff. Laura and I are going to come back in the same time slot next week. That's right, Labor Day. We'll be here when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We value it and we appreciate it. Between now and Labor Day, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.